Hey, welcome everyone to the latest episode of the SaaS Sessions podcast. We are on the 7th season now. Today we have Ankit Chaturvedi with us on the show. With over 15 years of experience, Ankit is currently the VP and Global Head of Marketing at RateGain. RateGain is India's first publicly listed SaaS company, which helps hotel and travel companies accelerate their revenue through acquisition, retention, and wallet share expansion. If you have ever booked travel online, you have experienced RateGain. So, hey, Ankit, such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Sunil. And hello to everyone at SaaS Sessions.
Great. So, I gave a very short intro, Ankit. So, why don't you expand on that and also tell us about your journey in the SaaS ecosystem?
Yeah, so I actually started my career in 2008, which I believe is the time when actual hustle in the Indian ecosystem came in, when we hit the recession. And we also saw a lot of companies, or digital first companies, or the first wave of digital marketing getting set up. It was also the first wave of when IT companies started experiencing a slowdown and started figuring out how do you optimize systems, how do you digitize more things. And I was very lucky to be part of that as someone who was starting his career. And this was at Tata Consultancy Services, right out of engineering. I was part of where we see all these memes now being pulled in a truck of mass hiring by recruiters. But I was very lucky to be part of a project at TCS where they were transforming their entire enterprise resource system for employees. That kind of gave me a very good understanding of how do you build scalable systems, how teams work together, how do you set up interoperable systems. And from there, I did that for 2 years and then did my MBA from SIBM. Amazing location, amazing college, amazing crowd. And then ended up with HCL at Noida. And again, was part of very cutting edge projects at that time. I'm talking almost 10 years back. Where what I realized was technology is only as good as the processes that are implemented to enable it and the people that you use it, how well trained they are, how much do they understand the pain point of tech. And I kind of went on a journey of combining communications with technology. Did some massive projects in Europe, gave me a great understanding of different cultures because we would travel a lot. And then moved into marketing and got exposure to a lot of innovative methods of marketing. This was just when content and digital marketing was kicking off. Didn't really have SEO experts everywhere. You didn't have people writing long form content, people having very good blogs, and you would essentially look westwards for inspiration. In India, in our ecosystem, you have so many good examples, but at that time, we didn't really have any examples to look at. Did that for some time. And then by the time we got to 2018, and I'd been at HCL for 5 years, my ex super, super boss, Apoor Chamaria, moved to RateGain. And today he heads the VC ecosystem for Google. And he told me about RateGain, and I was so amused and shocked and surprised by the scale of this company and how relatively unknown it was in India, that I was just so intrigued that I have to check out what this is, right? How is this company not known to anyone? And at that time, I think we were trending at around 20, 25 million ARR, but profitable, right? And had operations in around 6 countries. And that journey started, and we had a good product. We had a product that was really reliable and used by all the large chains in the world, be it hotel chains, be it OTAs like booking.com, Expedia. But the marketing function and the automation piece of it, as well as the whole GTM, automation and enablement piece, was missing. And that was something that me and my ex-boss, we were trying to kind of put together. and build that function. And that's a journey that we're still at, right? And the reason why it's taken us 4 to 5 years to kind of get there is because there are too many things that happened in the middle.
Mm.
We went through an IPO, but before that, we also went through COVID.
Mm.
So that 2.5 years were, as I would like to say, in a almost feels like it was a different universe. We weren't doing business as usual. And post that, once you become a listed company, once you have the pressures of how do you increase productivity, how do you improve margins, you start thinking of, okay, how do I drive more efficiency in my GTM processes? And that's where a lot of our focus is now. And I believe that even though it's just 5 years, and I completed 5 years last week, it's been an amazing journey of learning, right? So right from being part of building investor decks for our founder to actually understanding how do you message different products, different companies that we were acquiring, and to the part where you actually went public and tried to make it much more simpler for investors to understand what this company does and why should you invest in it. Now where we are trying to learn by ourselves, okay, what pieces can we automate? Where can we drive efficiencies? I think it's been very interesting journey, and every year has been a new phase, right? So that's what has kept it exciting. And that's why me, my team, everyone loves to show up at work. At office, we are not remote. So yeah.
Nice. That's a really great journey, and congrats on like hitting the 5 year at rate gain milestone. And I'm sure in those 5 years, like coming to the topic on what we're going to discuss, like, you know, about managing marketing teams, right? Like, and how are you currently managing the marketing team at RateGain, which is a publicly listed company? So I'm sure in your experience, you have managed teams across companies and from many, many years. So, and I've spoken to like different people, and everybody has different, you know, alignment on their marketing teams on whether they should be given revenue targets or they shouldn't be given revenue targets. At the end, they have to generate revenue, or they are responsible in a way to generate revenue. So what's your take on marketing teams having revenue targets?
So I really hope that none of my team members are listening to this. I mean, you would hope that they are listening to it, but I would hope they're not, because I will tell you a secret. And this is something that you would see across marketing, right? And most founders would struggle with this. Most CMOs would struggle with this. Is that marketing would continuously complain of, I have too much work. I have too much on my plate, right? The reason why you have too much on your plate is because you are unable to prioritize what has maximum impact. I've been in that boat for a long time, and my founder Bhanu would continuously tell me that, hey, aim for what will create most revenue impact, right? And theoretically, try and put that in place, but then something else would come and drop in my lap, and it would be very difficult to explain to a stakeholder on why I can't pick this, right?
Mm.
And fundamentally, most marketers are, to a certain extent, people pleasers, right? They want everyone to work with them, because that's the nature of the role, right? You have to work with everyone. You have to collaborate. Your role requires collaboration across functions, HR, finance, engineering, product, sales. There is no other role except the role of the CEO or the GM where they are actually interacting or creating value that impacts the customer, except marketing, right? And therefore, a lot of times you wouldn't say no. The second thing that we observed was that the overall motivation of why I'm doing this wasn't there. And the most important thing, Sunil, was how do you make sure that marketing has a seat on the table?
Mm.
You make sure of that when everyone in the room knows that they have enough as much at stake as you, right? They have skin in the game. So these were all reasons that we thought of that, hey, if we put revenue targets, that will force marketing to hold sales accountable. And it's a interesting balance to try and strike, because you want to be friends with sales, you want to make them happy, but at some point you also want to drive them to say, hey guys, what about this event? Why did we do this event if we didn't generate anything, right? What about these things? Why were they not converted? Why didn't your demo convert, right? I can only ask those questions if at an org level, I'm held responsible for the revenue or the bookings that comes from that. And the minute we did that, the other thing that changes, and this is something that people in tech, SaaS, or any other technology-driven organization can think of, is that the minute you put a booking number on someone's head, they start thinking, okay, how can I help you close? Right? They'll start going into the funnels and start seeing, okay, where is this deal stuck? Why is this not moving? Guys, what can we do to move this? Right? And in a way, in a mature organization, which is the vision that we are trying to move towards, you would then start decentralizing the work of the CEO or the GM to go and for sales and inside sales accountable and like, why didn't this demo convert? What can we do to activate it, right? Because marketing is the touch point of all of these places. And that's the change that we're seeing. So no one in my team now comes and says, I have too much work, because they have a number. They know what they can create. And then obviously there are much more strategic conversations in terms of when they're reporting to the management also. The way you list down your tasks is now thought of, okay, what is my high impact? What will get me action pipe? Right? So it's a mindset change that we are bringing. I did get a lot of resistance, but I think my team fortunately was willing to pick this up and try it out, because they knew that the company had their best interest at heart and we weren't trying to shortchange them. So it's a good way to also attract talent in today's market, because we are fundamentally saying that if you have what it takes and if you do believe that you're so good, you can make a lot of money, come and prove it. Right? And that way we are also able to look at talent that is maybe was not in our reach earlier, but also drive a conversation where marketing can go and say, this is actually our impact. This is what we did, right? Instead of saying, hey, we did 3 webinars and we did this and we did that. So the conversation fundamentally changes for the team. So I would say having revenue targets is good. It does keep you up at nights, but it makes you ready for, as a marketing folk as well, to take a larger role later in your career.
Makes sense. And it would be great to be a part of such an org as well, where, you know, everybody is chasing towards that revenue target as a company whole. And then like as a marketing team or as a sub team in the company, you have that revenue target. So, and it is clearly derived that, okay, you are giving that outcome, right? It's converting from an output-based role to an outcome-based role, right? Yes. Like, you're not doing 3 webinars, but hey, you're generated 30 ops from like maybe 2 or 1 webinar that you did, right? That is more like a higher outcome as opposed to like doing a 3 webinar and no ops from that, right? So would love to know, like you mentioned, like there was some resistance that you got from internally, like when you were trying to set this kind of system up. So what was that resistance like? Maybe some of the listeners in there or might be facing the same resistance as well.
I think the resistance was not from the leadership, but from the system. It's not the fault of the system. The system has been tuned to that kind of setup. That, why is marketing getting rewarded for bookings? That's why, right? It's not anyone's fault, or it's not anyone's agenda. It's how people are tuned in. But I had to thank, I think, our CFO and our founder, who actually thought that this actually makes a lot of sense. This would generate more numbers for us. This would make marketing more efficient. And we actually did that, right? Year on year, we actually started showing, even though it's just been 1 year of doing this and 2 quarters of doing this properly, we started seeing a pickup in terms of our overall ROI, reduction in untouched leads, our conversion of MQLs to SQLs, all of that has started improving, you know. People have started thinking of, okay, why, if my website is not responding, why is it not responding, right? But there was a resistance from some quarters on, you know, our marketing expense goes up, our P&L looks weaker. But I think our founder had that very clear vision that we should reward marketing. Why are we not doing it? It totally makes sense. And from a team perspective, I think the team was just worried that, oh my God, you know, will I get hit in terms of the money that I make? And that assurance you had to give them that, no, that will not be the case. You will still make as much money, even if you do bare minimum, even if you do 50%. And obviously we want to make it more tougher as we go on, right? Obviously we want to make it, we want to have slabs. We want to have cutoffs that if you don't make this much, at least you will not make any more money, because that will only increase the productivity. That will only increase the efficiency of the system. But one thing is, for anyone who's listening in, it's not a perfect science. We don't have all the answers. We don't have all the systems to track this 100%. We are using a lot of manual methods right now. We are now in the journey of automation of how do we get attribution? What is a marketing qualified lead in a real, without anyone's intervention, what do you call a marketing qualified lead? All of that is being done right now. And there's a lot of energy going towards that because we've tied it to an outcome. So for those who want to do this, I think you can start from somewhere till the time you have clarity on that your marketing, finance and HR team is talking to each other and agreeing on the objective. And for you to prove that value to your CFO, just show him or her what is it that maybe the impact of doing something like this. For example, we brought in a change recently, which where we said, you know, you give a certain incentive for hitting their numbers. But if they bring those numbers from certain percentage from digital, right, then you give them a kicker, right? Because if anything is coming from events or if anything is coming from branded roadshow, that's not really in the control of the marketing person. I mean, it is, but for a digital converted need or opportunity, there's a lot more work that the marketing guy is putting. But that's not enough to convince the CFO. You're like, oh, great, it's their job to do that work, right? But I actually did a drill down of, if we do this, you will actually save X thousand dollars in your marketing budget, right? And that number was somewhere around $90,000 to $100,000 on your marketing budget annually. You will start saving more, right? And that made sense to him that, okay, this is actually great. You should start this and see how it goes, right? So, so that could be a, go with a clear business case. So, how are you impacting the bottom line or the top line? And then you should be good.
Right. So basically talk about, like when you're talking to the CFO, you rightly mentioned that, hey, we'll save 100K annually. And that's when their eyes pop, like, oh, wow, I'm in. let's do this, right?
And that's our fundamental job externally also, right? We are so obsessed about understanding what do we communicate to our ICP. But there are stakeholders internally whose motives you have to understand. That's also something I learned in the rate game, right? It's so assumed or such a basic thing that are you talking the language of the person who you're trying to convince? And internally we forget that, right? And that's what I was telling someone, that I think I spend more time with finance than I do with my own team now. Do that if you want your own team to enjoy the benefits of making numbers and give them that or 10 something closets, they also celebrate as much.
Makes sense. I think, and moving on to the next thing, right? Like earlier you were mentioning that since everybody, like in marketing, really don't know how to prioritize. And I would say like that's most of the people. But like, and especially when you have revenue targets, it becomes really difficult to pick things, you know, anything that comes on your plate randomly, because, hey, you are working towards a bigger goal and you would want to focus on if this new thing or new project is going to get me to my target of X amount of revenue, X dollars in revenue. If yes, it's going to bring the highest impact, then I'll pick up. If not, then that's just like a back burner, or that's like low priority, right? But there are like these, like, you know, short-term revenue goals that you have, and there are like, you know, things that you do, as you mentioned, right? Like a lead or opportunity converting from an event versus like a lead that, or a digital lead is different, right? Because when it's an event, it's also like, you know, the amount of brand over the years that you have built, which also helps in like, you know, attracting your prospects at the event particularly. And that takes a lot of time. So it's like a long-term benefit, or it's a long-term goal. So in such a case, like, how do you make sure, like, when your team has revenue targets, so how do you keep that balance between, you know, short-term revenue generation goals versus long-term brand building efforts? Because you do have to do both. Although you have a revenue target, you still have to think long-term, like, hey, 1 year from now, we do want to have a brand which is much bigger than what it is today.
We, on a long-term basis, I think, Sunil, we only started thinking clearly during the pandemic, right? And during the pandemic, because we had time and there was no sales happening, a lot of focus, that was the pivoting point for us from a marketing perspective, because we started making noise that was relevant and noise that differentiated RateGain from everyone else. And that's when commercial leaders, as well as our leadership, took notice on we should invest in brand, right? And our investments in brand, even now, is slow, and it's small steps at a time, right? And the way we are doing it is we are thinking of, we have one key personality trait that we're trying to drive of our brand, is that we are associated with innovation in our sector, right? In travel, hospitality, because we believe that in travel and hospitality, if you exclude the OTAs and if you exclude a lot of the airlines, fundamentally the 80% of the hotel industry is not that innovative, and they for some reason have lagged behind, which makes no sense to me, because this was the industry that first had automation before anyone else had automation, right? It's one of the biggest, it is the biggest industry in terms of high value purchases and the promise of delivering a great experience, right? And even then, there's so much fragmentation within the industry that technology hasn't really evolved as fast as we would like to be. So we, for the last 3 years, have been focusing a lot on positioning ourselves as an innovative player. And in that regard, we've been doing stuff, but very, very slowly, right? Where we have been talking at conferences, sessions about how to use AI much before this whole AI thing exploded last year. And as well as doing workshops with leading brands, as well as doing roundtables, all of that to kind of drive a narrative of we need to start thinking beyond the traditional ecosystem. And that might not have a lot of return immediately, but what it does is it does, from an ROI perspective, if you had to think about it, we push it is if someone delivers a great presentation and they see that we've been doing this across 4 or 5 events, then we start pushing for organic placements of these speaking opportunities, right? And that itself becomes an investment that I might have made, but I've actually saved, right? So it's not actual savings that I've got, but it's notional savings that, yes, I would have paid $5,000 for this, but I actually got it for free. And then we don't measure it, but there is an understanding within the company that, you know, that the kind of visibility it will generate in terms of social media presence, reach, that right now we are okay with. We don't have a way to measure it. We would never have a way to measure it.
Mm.
But that's a place that we are trying to increase our presence, but not as fast as I would like to. And I think it's okay, because with brand building, the problem is if you accelerate it too quick, then you can't really scale back. Because when you scale back, everyone takes notice that why aren't they doing as much?
Mm.
So we are building very slowly in terms of what do we want to say, how many places we want to say. And it will not be visible in India unless you read the newspapers.
Hmm.
I'll give you two examples, right? And it's a very nifty way for founders to also not spend money, but get good visibility. And so if you go and search for the travel editors in the leading newspapers of India today and look at their articles, every month they will have one to two stories that will feature data from RateGain. Right? And they would say that RateGain actually said this. RateGain's data is showing this, right? What is that doing? That's subtly building an awareness amongst hoteliers and anyone who's interested in the travel space to say, you guys have data. What kind of data do you have? Right? And these are all stories about how consumer behavior is changing, how travel patterns are changing, how people are spending more. And this information is needed by pretty much everyone.
Hmm.
So we start seeing an increase in inbound leads, even though I can't attribute it to those papers, but they start coming and just dropping leads and saying, I need this data, right? And the second thing you do is you do a similar thing with campuses, universities, you plant the seed in the head of students that are joining your industry that this company has a lot of data, right? It's something that we guys are working on right now. But we believe that without spending a lot of money, we can plant our brand in the head of our target audience. And it's a great hack. So during 2020, we did spend on our PR firms, which were not a lot of money, but we cracked such good story angles that we generated almost 90 plus coverages for an investment of 10 lakhs.
Nice.
And in that, we were on the homepage of Economic Times 10 times.
Mm.
Right? So that's how we look at brand building. Is are people able to see our brand in relation to the kind of products that we offer? And is it associated with a story that or a problem that they might have?
Mm.
So that's how we are focusing on the long term versus the short term. But it's an area where we will invest more because we are now publicly listed.
Hmm.
Now that we are publicly listed, it's an area that we will invest in more because we want to be relevant to more people.
Hmm.
But again, it's much slower than you would expect at a lot of companies.
Nice. That's a really good story and a good hack for people who are listening who want to.
It was a great hack because people mostly pick up PR at the end of their marketing stack, right?
Mm.
And I wouldn't say spend on PR till you have your story and your the narratives that you want to pitch cleared out. If you have a narrative, you know what value can you drive. It's the same thing as selling your broader to a prospect. I've done so many cold emails to journalists across the world by telling them, I have this data. You write about this. We should do a meeting.
Hmm.
Right? And I make no money off it, by the way, right? And then I get them on a call. And these are journalists. So I would write directly to editors.
Hmm.
Right? They would come on call. I would show them. And then I have to also show them that this is not the product. I actually can tell you what kind of story you can do.
Hmm.
Because every journalist needs stories because they're competing for time and space within their own company as well as with their competitor brands. So if you need that, then you need stories to come in quickly. And that's something that I can solve. And that's something a lot of startups that have their ICP nailed are also solving. And they can figure out there are multiple places to figure out who the journalist Riziki is, one of them. What space do they operate in? And just reach out to them on LinkedIn, and you'll be surprised how many journalists respond. So it's a great hack to get in.
Nice. It's really great. It's a good tangent to go on from the main topic, and like definitely one worthy of, you know, having its own like different episode as well. Like, you know, how do you build that, you know, brand via PR engine, right? But yeah, coming back to the original thing, right? Like, great insight in between, like, managing short term revenue goals and long term like brand, which is both of them are important. How do you do it correctly? Okay. So in such case, right, like just picking things, so how do you collaborate with like different departments, right? You mentioned like marketing is one team, like where you have to collaborate with different departments, multiple departments on multiple scales, particularly, and while collaborating to ensure that your marketing initiatives are aligned with the revenue targets as well. Right, like each department has their own, let's say, North Star, if you may, or their own targets or their own metrics they're chasing, but then you have to collaborate with them. So how do you make sure that your metrics and their metrics, or your goals and their goals, are aligned with each other?
In most cases, at the product level, you have, I think it goes back to the basics of marketing that I have talked about, right? You really have to understand what is this person need. And that's what I tell everyone, right? If you're talking to someone, if you're talking to an engineer, or you're talking to a product guy and saying, hey, I need to build this campaign and I need this data. At the end of the day, the product guy will ask you, right, why? Because the product guy is much more busier than you are.
Hmm.
You will have to help them understand what the end goal is, and how will it benefit them? How will it help them make them meet their numbers? And that is how we've done it. That is how we continue to do it. And that is why something that we at Radiant drive with our product marketing folks is, you need to be a pseudo or a shadow of the product manager, so that if the product manager does not show up one day, right, or just disappears in thin air, you can take over, right? You can take over customer. Well, it's a cultural change that we are driving now. And if they have that kind of understanding, then they will be able to have those conversations much more easily on this is what we're trying to do, this is how it will benefit you. Because at the beginning of the conversation, we said that we've tied it back to revenue goals. So fundamentally, the conversation will start with, why are we doing this? How will this help in approaching our pipeline or revenue? And how does it benefit anyone else in the conversation? But again, collaboration in a fast-moving organization is always a challenge. But I think the way that the organization has been set up from the beginning makes it very easy for us, this, right? So everyone is a message away or a phone call away. And you could be the most junior person in Red Game calling a GM of the business. He will not say no. He will not say, why are you even talking to me? And that's almost, I could say, like a core value, both humility and siblings keeper, or something that was a core value when I joined in, which is you have to keep your ego outside and you have to help everyone that needs help. So that culture allows us to drive better collaboration, listen to each other, even if you're a junior person walking into a senior person's room randomly and asking for something. I've not seen that as a problem, though. To be honest, if you ask me, how do we solve it? Apart from the fact that I said that you tell them what is in it for them, there's not really a lot of problem in getting set up in that game.
I think it's set up in such a way that, like, those frictions or those problems don't occur, as you mentioned, right? Like, anybody can talk to anybody, and as long as you're telling them or convincing them, like, what's in it for them factor, why not? Like, they're in, and you can, as you said, like, you spend more time with your CFO because you tell your CFO that, hey, this is gone, the change that we're going to do, or this, the things that we're going to do is going to help us save 100K annually or blah, blah, blah. So that kind of helps them. So yeah, no, you, like ICP is like your internal customer profile, right? Like know your internal company people.
I did something that I also learned it. I'm not going to come and note about the fact that I have it all solved. It's something that I'm learning. I'm trying to do because it's only now that we really built our marketing function. So that's what, and that's the challenge that most marketers will face as they grow in their leadership growth, or if their organizations grow, right? Beyond a number, beyond a certain size, beyond a certain job. That you will have to manage different people. You will have to manage their expectations. Everyone wants their work done first, and you will have to help them figure out how can we do that. So visibility internally is, again, something which is very underrated, but something that we are trying to drive because we are a widespread organization now. And the idea is to, before someone comes and follows up with you, you actually have some sort of mechanism to alert them that this is what we're working on already. Don't worry. And then they can be rest assured sitting far, far away that, hey, it's fine. We know this is getting worked on. The other thing that we're trying, and this is something I read off a LinkedIn board, is running sprints in marketing. So instead of saying, I'll do this, I'll do that, there are always pieces in marketing that need being reworked upon. It could be a refresh of ads, it could be revisiting your nurture journeys, it could be updating your one pagers or looking at your website content or thinking of new ideas on campaigns or translating content. And if you were to start putting these small tasks together, you will realize that there are a lot of such small tasks that get piled up and you're not able to prioritize. So we made a very simple exercise of sprints where we are saying that for 10 days or 2 weeks, marketing will be in a sprint where we will work on what has been agreed with the leadership, or we will publish to the leadership what we are working on. And then each general manager or business head or product head can come and say, okay, no, don't work on this, actually pick this up. And then we lock that list and then we start working on it, right? If something has to be moved in that during the sprint, everyone knows this is being moved and something else being inserted, right? And then 2 weeks later, we do a publishing exercise. Okay, this has been done. This is done. This is the status. This was last update then. And suddenly the whole problem that even you guys at GTM Buddy earlier were trying to solve starts to get solved to a certain extent to say, okay, was the new one pager updated last month? Yes, it was. Okay, cool. Because this is the sprint status that says so. And that also starts giving both the marketing team as well as the commercial team an understanding of what is being done. And where is marketing, right? So that's also helping us reduce some of the noise, some of the issues in Raid Game and in any fast growing company.
Nice. That is like an interesting take, running sprints for marketing. And I'm sure there's a lot learning, a lot of learning and a lot of insights in there as well.
Yeah, I think that could be a discussion for next episode or whenever we have done 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, totally. Great. So yeah, great insights. And, you know, just shifting gears to the last section of the episode, which is a lightning round. So I'm going to ask you like 3 questions and you have to answer like whatever is on top of your head quickly. So yeah, number one, what's the one fundamental change that you're making in your job in this year?
I think I'm trying to be more planned, and that's what you see in the last few conversations we've had, both in terms of why am I working on something, and the biggest thing that I'm trying to make is I'm starting to say no. It's very difficult. It is extremely difficult for marketers, but I'm trying to do that with a lot of respect to all the colleagues that come to me with tasks. I don't say no upfront. I do say no, I can't do this because I'm trying to finish this off. But here is how you can solve for this or talk to this person to solve for this. But I'm starting to say no, and it's a small superpower that I'm trying to build.
Nice. That is interesting. Yeah, on to the second one. So what's the one thing that has helped you shorten your learning curve?
Tend to the industry that you're in and know everything about it. So obsess about the space you operate in. Obsess as much as that. And it might not be healthy always, but the first thing that you do when you enter any industry to shorten your learning curve, or to if you're in a certain zone, is what are the sources that can be trusted to understand this industry or this the product that you're selling, right? And then read that daily, understand who works on that, who's the person behind the research, reach out to them, build a relationship with them, see what are they saying. If you don't have any other resources, right? And that helps you. Second is spend an enormous amount of time with your sales guys. Yes, their information might be biased, but they would know something better than you trying to figure out from somewhere. And the third way is always understand how you make money. The shorter your learning curve, if you know how your company makes money, most marketers run away from numbers. Most marketers, oh no, Excel is not my game. I don't understand balance sheets. Get into your balance sheet. And I was again lucky enough to be part of both at SCL at some point and at RateGain very initially on numbers, balance sheets. How are we making money? Where are we getting the money? What kind of models work? You know, pay us. Why do they pay us so much? What is the competition charge? And then you start understanding that if you have to grow so much, where will you start playing? Where are your customers located? And then you can drill down from there, right? So those were, I said three things, but they are, that is how I.
No, that's okay. The more, the better, right? Like to know what you are doing to shorten your learning curve. Yeah. And on to the last one. So what do you know about your work now that you wish you would have known when you first started?
Manage internal change better than the external change. And at the end of the day, marketers are the biggest proponents of change management. You are telling your customers, this is changing, the world is changing, you need to move to a new way of thinking. But we forget to manage change internally.
Mm-hmm.
Tell others that, hey, this is how marketing is changing. So externally, you're saying, this is how the world is changing. Internally, you're saying, this is how marketing is changing. And then you continue to struggle for budgets, right? Continue to struggle for, we can't get more money because no one understands us. That's because you haven't put in enough effort of making people understand why you need that money and how can that money's efficiency be measured, right? And it's something that I'm trying to change now about myself. Most marketers hate taking ideas from people outside of marketing. I love doing that. One of our most innovative campaigns came from our head of engineering, who doesn't do marketing. But he just said, I don't know, factly that, hey, why don't we do this 30-second video of some sort, right? He didn't tell you exactly what. But he said, why can't we do this? And we scoffed at him. And then one day later, I was like, why not? Why don't we try this? And it worked, right? It got us organic leads, not only leads, we got organic opportunities from those. So it can get very, very difficult for marketers to take feedback from everyone. There are thousands of memes. We also laugh about it. But have people outside of marketing to tell you how they are thinking about marketing, because that will be the check of where are you? Where are you missing the mark?
Makes sense. Yeah, that is very insightful and very different perspective on like, yeah, listen to like people who are not, but also make sure that you hit your revenue and, you know, don't get divulged into some random requests until it drives impact, right? Like that is always like the bottom line. But
I feel that at times we complicate all of this quite a bit with all the noise that's going around, but the fundamentals of working or proving value have not changed a lot. They might have modified in terms of how the buyer consumes, how, you know, how, where are they consuming it? What are they thinking of when they're consuming it? That might have changed. Mm. But there are core tenets of building a relationship externally and internally. That is not going to change in 50 years, right? Marketing is fundamentally 75, 80 years old. Modern market. But human behavior has been around for 10, 20,000 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Change human behavior so quickly, right? So, we, if as you scale, as companies scale, as you go bigger, those core tenets play a very key role in anyone's success. And that's what most people kind of forget in all the jazz that's going around right now. So you can get caught up, you can tangle yourself in numbers and journeys and analytics and data, or you, and that's also important. But you need to also have a fine balance on, to me, they have everyone on our side. The people that are not on our side, why are they not on our side?
Mm-hmm.
We need to fix that relationship or not. If not, what is the harm? If yes, what does it require? So those are the things that we need to remember. And that will definitely help in some way, if not at all.
Nice. That's great, Ankit. Like, thanks a lot for sharing all the insights and all the hacks, I would say, and like a lot of secret stuff that you're brewing while managing your team at RateGain. Yeah, any parting piece of advice for people?
I think that this is something that we would see a lot across a lot of platforms. A lot of people are seeing a slowdown for the first time in their lives in a lot of sectors. And I've seen very qualified people being laid off, being not being honored their offers after peacefuls. But I can tell you from my experience that anything that you will do now and the effort that you will put now will help you build your skills for 5, 6, 7 years down the line. Right? We get really caught up about how much do I make, how much, you know, I don't have the best job starting out. And I don't have the best career path starting out. I didn't start out in marketing. I slowly reached there. Don't get tangled upon, oh my God, it's been 1 year. I'm not at the right path of my career. Career is 30 years, 25 years of work. I tell everyone who's starting out that for the first 5 years, just try and do whatever is coming your way, because it will all add up to helping in eventually what you will do. And right now is the best time to do it, because right now we're in the middle of a disruption. Right? The last time this disruption came, it was 15 years back. Most of us were not working. And at that time we picked up whatever we could. Right? And the result of that disruption was companies like Freshworks. The result of an earlier disruption for companies like Booking, Expedia, so on and so forth, and they are giants today. So whenever there's a disruption, don't get bogged down, because these are cycles, right? So it'll go up and it'll come back down again. Just think that this is the right time to kind of stretch your arms, stretch your legs, and do whatever comes your way. There are enough tools and resources to experiment, to learn. And the last piece of advice would be always tune into every new episode of SaaS Sessions.
Oh, wow. That's a great plug. That's a great plug for sure. Great advice. Cool. Thanks, Ankit, for sharing again all the insights and being on the show.
Thank you so much, Sunil. And I will take your leave now.